Sixth of the Dusk. Death hunted beneath the waves. Dusk saw it approach. An enormous blackness within the deep blue. A shadowed form as wide as 6 narrow boats tied together. Dusk's hands tensed on his paddle, his heartbeat racing as he immediately sought out Coquerlie. Fortunately, the colorful bird sat in his customary place on the prow of the boat, idly biting at one clawed foot raised to his beak. Coquerlie lowered his foot and puffed out his feathers, as if completely unmindful of the danger beneath. Dusk held his breath. He always did when unfortunate enough to run across one of those things in the open ocean. He did not know what they looked like beneath those waves. He hoped never to find out. The shadow drew closer, almost to the boat now. A school of slimfish passing nearby jumped into the air in a silvery wave, spooked by the shadow's approach. The terrified fish showered back to the water with a sound like rain. The shadow did not deviate. The slimfish were too small a meal to interest it. A boat's occupants, however, it passed directly underneath. Sack chirped quietly from Dusk's shoulder. The second bird seemed to have some sense of the danger. Creatures like the shadow did not hunt by smell or sight, but by sensing the minds of prey. Dusk glanced at Coquerlie again, his only protection against a danger that could swallow his ship whole. He had never clipped Coquerlie's wings, but at times like this he understood why many sailors preferred AVR that could not fly away. The boat rocked softly, the jumping slimfish stilled. Waves lapped against the sides of the vessel. Had the shadow stopped? Hesitated? Did it sense them? Coquerlie's protective aura had always been enough before, but... The shadow slowly vanished. It had turned to swim downward, Dusk realized. In moments he could make out nothing through the waters. He hesitated, then forced himself to get out his new mask. It was a modern device he had acquired only 2 supply trips back, a glass faceplate with leather at the sides. He placed it on the water's surface and leaned down, looking into the depths. They became as clear to him as an undisturbed lagoon. Nothing. Just that endless deep. Fool man, he thought, tucking away the mask and getting out his paddle. Didn't you just think to yourself that you never wanted to see one of those? Still, as he started paddling again, he knew that he'd spend the rest of this trip feeling as if the shadow were down there following him. That was the nature of the waters. You never knew what lurked below. He continued on his journey, paddling his outrigger canoe and reading the lapping of the waves to judge his position. Those waves were as good as a compass for him. Once they would have been good enough for any of the Ilokin, his people. These days, just the trappers learned the old arts. Admittedly, though, even he carried one of the newest compasses, wrapped up in his pack with a set of the new sea charts, maps given as gifts by the ones above during their visit earlier in the year. They were said to be more accurate than even the latest surveys, so he'd purchased a set just in case. You could not stop times from changing, his mother said. No more than you could stop the surf from rolling. It was not long, after the accounting of tides, before he caught sight of the first island. Sori was a small island in the Pantheon, and the most commonly visited. Her name meant child. Dusk vividly remembered training on her shores with his uncle. It had been long since he'd burned an offering to Sori, despite how well she had treated him during his youth. Perhaps a small offering would not be out of line. Patchy would not grow jealous. One could not be jealous of Sori, the least of the islands. Just as every trapper was welcome on Sori, every other island in the Pantheon was said to be affectionate of her. Be that as it may, Sori did not contain much valuable game. Dusk continued rowing, moving down one leg of the archipelago his people knew as the Pantheon. From a distance, this archipelago was not so different from the home isles of the Ilokin, now a 3-week trip behind him. From a distance. Up close, They were very, very different. Over the next 5 hours, Dusk rode past Sori, then her three cousins. He had never set foot on any of those three. In fact, he had not landed on many of the 40-some islands in the Pantheon. At the end of his apprenticeship, a trapper chose one island and worked there all his life. He had chosen Patchy, an event some 10 years past now. Seemed like far less. Dusk saw no other shadows beneath the waves, but he kept watch. Not that he could do much to protect himself. Coker Lee did all of that work as he roosted happily at the prow of the ship, eyes half closed. Dusk had fed him seed. Coker Lee did like it so much more than dried fruit. Nobody knew why beasts like the shadows only lived here in the waters near the Pantheon. Why not travel across the seas to the Ilokan Islands or the mainland, where food would be plentiful and aviar like Coker Lee were far more rare? Once, these questions had not been asked. The seas were what they were. Now, however, men poked and prodded into everything, then asked why, then said, "We should explain it." Dusk shook his head, dipping his paddle into the water. That sound, wood on water, had been his companion for most of his days. He understood it far better than he did the speech of men, even if sometimes their questions got inside of him and refused to go free. After the cousins, most trappers would have turned north or south, moving along branches of the archipelago until reaching their chosen island. Dusk continued forward, into the heart of the islands, until a shape loomed before him. Patchy, largest island of the Pantheon. It towered like a wedge rising from the sea, a place of inhospitable peaks, sharp cliffs, and deep jungle. "Hello, old destroyer," he thought. "Hello, father." Dusk raised his paddle and placed it in the boat. He sat there for a time, chewing on fish from last night's catch, feeding scraps to Sack. The black-plumed bird ate them with an air of solemnity. Coker Lee continued to sit on the prow, chirping occasionally. He would be eager to land. Sack seemed never to grow eager about anything. Approaching Patchy was not a simple task, even for one who trapped his shores. The boat continued its dance with the waves as Dusk considered which landing to make. Eventually, he put the fish away, then dipped his paddle back into the waters. Those waters remained deep and blue despite the proximity to the island. Some members of the Pantheon had sheltered bays and gradual beaches. Patchy had no patience for such foolishness. His beaches were rocky and had steep drop-offs. You were never safe on his shores. In fact, the beaches were the most dangerous part. Upon them, not only could the horrors of the land get to you, but you were still within reach of the deep's monsters. Dusk's uncle had cautioned him about this time and time again. Only a fool slept on Patchy's shores. The tide was with him, and he avoided being caught in any of the swells that would crush him against those stern rock faces. Dusk approached a partially sheltered expanse of stone crags and outcroppings, Patchy's version of a beach. Coker Lee fluttered off, chirping and calling as he flew toward the trees. Dusk immediately glanced at the waters. No shadows. Still, he felt naked as he hopped out of the canoe and pulled it up onto the rocks, warm water washing against his legs. Sack remained in her place on Dusk's shoulder. Nearby in the surf, Dusk saw a corpse bobbing in the water. "Beginning your visions early, my friend," he thought, glancing at Sack. The AVR usually waited until they'd fully landed before bestowing her blessing. The black-feathered bird just watched the waves. Dusk continued his work. The body he saw on the surf was his own. It told him to avoid that section of water. Perhaps there was a spiny anemone that would have pricked him, or perhaps a deceptive undercurrent lay in wait. Sack's visions did not show such detail. They gave only warning. Dusk got the boat out of the water, then detached the floats, tying them more securely onto the main part of the canoe. Following that, he worked the vessel carefully up the shore, mindful not to scrape the hull on sharp rocks. He would need to hide the canoe in the jungle. If another trapper discovered it, Dusk would be stranded on the island for several extra weeks preparing his spare. That would... He stopped as his heel struck something soft as he backed up the shore. He glanced down, expecting a pile of seaweed. Instead, he found a damp piece of cloth. A shirt? Dusk held it up, then noticed other, more subtle signs across the shore. Broken lengths of sanded wood, bits of paper floating in an eddy. Those fools, he thought. He returned to moving his canoe. Rushing was never a good idea on a Pantheon island. He did step more quickly, however. As he reached the tree line, he caught sight of his corpse hanging from a tree nearby. Those were cutaway vines lurking in the fern-like treetop. Sax squawked softly on his shoulder as Dusk hefted a large stone from the beach, then tossed it at the tree. It thumped against the wood, and sure enough, the vines dropped like a net, full of stinging barbs. They would take a few hours to retract. Dusk pulled his canoe over and hid it in the underbrush near the tree. Hopefully, other trappers would be smart enough to stay away from the cutaway vines, and therefore wouldn't stumble over his boat. Before placing the final camouflaging fronds, Dusk pulled out his pack. Though the centuries had changed a trapper's duties very little, the modern world did offer its benefits. Instead of a simple wrap that left his legs and chest exposed, he put on thick trousers with pockets on the legs, and a buttoning shirt to protect his skin against sharp branches and leaves. Instead of sandals, Dusk tied on sturdy boots, and instead of a tooth-lined club, he bore a machete of the finest steel. His pack contained luxuries like a steel-hooked rope, a lantern, and a fire starter that created sparks simply by pressing the two handles together. He looked very little like the trappers in the paintings back home. He didn't mind. He'd rather stay alive. Dusk left the canoe, shouldering his pack, machete sheathed at his side. Sack moved to his other shoulder. Before leaving the beach, Dusk paused, looking at the image of his translucent corpse still hanging from unseen vines by the tree. Could he really have ever been foolish enough to be caught by cutaway vines? Near as he could tell, Sack only showed him plausible deaths. He liked to think that most were fairly unlikely, a vision of what could have happened if he'd been careless or if his uncle's training hadn't been so extensive. Once, Dusk had stayed away from any place where he saw his corpse. It wasn't bravery that drove him to do the opposite now, he just needed to confront the possibilities. He needed to be able to walk away from this beach knowing that he could still deal with cutaway vines. If he avoided danger, he would soon lose his skills. He could not rely on Sack too much, for Patchy would try on every possible occasion to kill him. Dusk turned and trudged across the rocks along the coast. Doing so went against his instincts. He normally wanted to get inland as soon as possible. Unfortunately, he could not leave without investigating the origins of the debris he had seen earlier. He had a strong suspicion of where he would find their source. He gave a whistle, and Kokerlii trilled above, flapping out of a tree nearby and winging over the beach. The protection he offered would not be as strong as it would be if he were close, but the beasts that hunted mines on the island were not as large or as strong of psyche as the shadows of the ocean. Dusk and Sack would be invisible to them. About a half hour up the coast, Dusk found the remnants of a large camp. Broken boxes, fraying ropes lying half-submerged in tidal pools, ripped canvas, shattered pieces of wood that might once have been walls. Kokerlii landed on a broken pole. There were no signs of his corpse nearby. That could mean that the area wasn't immediately dangerous. It could also mean that whatever might kill him here would swallow the corpse whole. Dusk trod lightly on wet stones at the edge of the broken campsite. No, larger than a campsite. Dusk ran his fingers over a broken chunk of wood, stenciled with the words, Northern Interests Trading Company, a powerful mercantile force from his homeland. He had told them. He had told them. Do not come to Patchy. Fools! And they had camped here on the beach itself. Was nobody in that company capable of listening? He stopped beside a group of gouges in the rocks, as wide as his upper arm, running some 10 paces long. They led toward the ocean. Shadow, he thought. One of the deep beasts. His uncle had spoken of seeing one once, an enormous something that had exploded up from the depths. It had killed a dozen krell that had been chewing on oceanside weeds before retreating into the waters with its feast. Dusk shivered, imagining this camp on the rocks, bustling with men unpacking boxes, preparing to build the fort they had described to him. But where was their ship? The great steam-powered vessel with an iron hull they claimed could rebuff the attacks of even the deepest of shadows. Did it now defend the ocean bottom, a home for slim fish and octopus? There were no survivors, nor even any corpses that Dusk could see. The shadow must have consumed them. He pulled back to the slightly safer locale of the jungle's edge, then scanned the foliage, looking for signs that people had passed this way. The attack was recent, within the last day or so. He absently gave Sack a seed from his pocket as he located a series of broken fronds leading into the jungle. So there were survivors, maybe as many as a half dozen. They had each chosen to go in a different direction, in a hurry, running from the attack. Running through the jungle was a good way to get dead. These company types thought themselves rugged and prepared. They were wrong. He'd spoken to a number of them, trying to persuade as many of their trappers as possible to abandon the voyage. It had done no good. He wanted to blame the visits of the ones above for causing this foolish striving for progress, but the truth was the companies had been talking about posts on the Pantheon for years. Dusk sighed. Well, these survivors were likely dead now. He should leave them to their fates. Except the thought of it, outsiders on Patchy, it made him shiver with something that mixed disgust and anxiety. They were here. It was wrong. These islands were sacred, the trappers their priests. The plants rustled nearby. Dusk whipped his machete about, leveling it, reaching into his pocket for his sling. It was not a refugee who left the bushes, or even a predator. A group of small, mouse-like creatures crawled out, sniffing the air. Sack squawked. She had never liked meekers.
Food,
the three meekers sent to Dusk.
Food.
It was the most rudimentary of thoughts projected directly into his mind. Though he did not want the distraction, he did not pass up the opportunity to fish out some dried meat for the meekers. As they huddled around it, sending him gratitude, he saw their sharp teeth and the single pointed fang at the tips of their mouths. His uncle had told him that once meekers had been dangerous to men. One bite was enough to kill. Over the centuries, the little creatures had grown accustomed to trappers. They had minds beyond those of dull animals. Almost he found them as intelligent as the aviar. You remember? He sent them through thoughts. You remember your task?
Others, they sent back gleefully. Bite others!
Trappers ignored these little beasts. Dusk figured that maybe with some training the meekers could provide an unexpected surprise for one of his rivals. He fished in his pocket, fingers brushing an old stiff piece of feather. Then, not wanting to pass up the opportunity, he got a few long bright green and red feathers from his pack. They were mating plumes, which he'd taken from Coker Lee during the aviar's most recent molting. He moved into the jungle, meekers following with excitement. Once he neared their den, he stuck the mating plumes into some branches, as if they had fallen there naturally. A passing trapper might see the plumes and assume that aviar had a nest nearby, fresh with eggs for the plunder. That would draw them. Bite others, Dusk instructed again.
Bite others, they replied.
He hesitated, thoughtful. Had they perhaps seen something from the company wreck? Point him in the right direction. Have you seen any others? Dusk sent them. Recently, in the jungle.
Bite others, came the reply.
They were intelligent, but not that intelligent. Dusk bade the animals farewell and turned toward the forest. After a moment's deliberation, he found himself striking inland, crossing, then following one of the refugee trails. He chose the one that looked as if it would pass uncomfortably close to one of his own safe camps, deep within the jungle. It was hotter here beneath the jungle's canopy, despite the shade. Comfortably sweltering, Cooker Lee joined him, winging up ahead to a branch where a few lesser ABR sat chirping. Cooker Lee towered over them, but sang at them with enthusiasm. An ABR raised around humans never quite fit back in among their own kind. The same could be said of a man raised among ABR. Dusk followed the trail left by the refugee, expecting to stumble over the man's corpse at any moment. He did not, though his own dead body did occasionally appear along the path. He saw it lying half-eaten in the mud or tucked away in a fallen log with only the foot showing. He could never grow too complacent with Sack on his shoulder. It did not matter if Sack's visions were truth or fiction. He needed the constant reminder of how Patchy treated the unwary. He fell into the familiar but not comfortable lope of a Pantheon trapper. Alert, wary, careful not to brush leaves that could carry biting insects. Cutting with the machete only when necessary, lest he leave a trail another could follow. Listening, aware of his aviar at all times, never outstripping Cooker Lee or letting him drift too far ahead. The refugee did not fall to the common dangers of the island. He cut across game trails rather than following them. The surest way to encounter predators was to fall in with their food. The refugee did not know how to mask his trail, but neither did he blunder into the nest of fire-snap lizards, or brush the deathweed bark, or step into the patch of hungry mud. Was this another trapper, perhaps? A youthful one, not fully trained? That seemed something the company would try. Experienced trappers were beyond recruitment. None would be foolish enough to guide a group of clerks and merchants around the islands. But a youth who had not yet chosen his island? A youth who perhaps resented being required to practice only on Sori until his mentor determined his apprenticeship complete? Dusk had felt that way 10 years ago. So the company had hired itself a trapper at last. That would explain why they had grown so bold as to finally organize their expedition. But Patchy himself, he thought, kneeling beside the bank of a small stream. It had no name, but it was familiar to him. Why would they come here? The answer was simple. They were merchants. The biggest to them would be the best. Why waste time on lesser islands? Why not come for the father himself? Above, Cooker Lee landed on a branch and began pecking at a fruit. The refugee had stopped by this river. Dusk had gained time on the youth. Judging by the depth the boy's footprints had sunk in the mud, Dusk could imagine his weight and height. 16? Maybe younger? Trappers apprenticed at 10, but Dusk could not imagine even the company trying to recruit one so ill-trained.
2 hours gone, Dusk thought, turning a broken stem and smelling the sap.
The boy's path continued on toward Dusk's safe camp.
How?
Dusk had never spoken of it to anyone. Perhaps this youth was apprenticing under one of the other trappers who visited Patchy. One of them could have found his safe camp and mentioned it. Dusk frowned, considering. In 10 years on Patchy, he had seen another trapper in person only a handful of times. On each occasion, they had both turned and gone a different direction without saying a word. It was the way of such things. They would try to kill one another, but they didn't do it in person. Better to let Patchy claim rivals than to directly stain one's hands. At least, so his uncle had taught him. Sometimes Dusk found himself frustrated by that. Patchy would get them all eventually. Why help the father out? Still, it was the way of things, so he went through the motions. Regardless, this refugee was making directly for Dusk's safe camp. The youth might not know the proper way of things. Perhaps he had come seeking help, afraid to go to one of his master's safe camps for fear of punishment, or...
No, best to avoid pondering it. Dusk already had a mind full of spurious conjectures. He would find what he would find. He had to focus on the jungle and its dangers. He started away from the stream, and as he did so, he saw his corpse appear suddenly before him. He hopped forward, then spun backward, hearing a faint hiss. The distinctive sound was made by air escaping from a small break in the ground, followed by a flood of tiny yellow insects, each as small as a pinhead. A new death ant pod? If he'd stood there a little longer, disturbing their hidden nest, they would have flooded up around his boot. One bite and he'd be dead. He stared at that pool of scrambling insects longer than he should have. They pulled back into their nest, finding no prey. Sometimes a small bulge announced their location, but today he had seen nothing. Only Sack's vision had saved him. Such was life on Patchy. Even the most careful trapper could make a mistake, and even if they didn't, death could still find them. Patchy was a domineering, vengeful parent who sought the blood of all who landed on his shores. Sack chirped on his shoulder. Dusk rubbed her neck in thanks, though her chirp sounded apologetic. The warning had come almost too late. Without her, Patchy would have claimed him this day. Dusk shoved down those itching questions he should not be thinking, and continued on his way. He finally approached his safe camp as evening settled upon the island. Two of his tripwires had been cut, disarming them. That was not surprising. Those were meant to be obvious. Dusk crept past another death ant nest in the ground. This larger one had a permanent crack as an opening they could flood out of, but the rift had been stoppered with a smoldering twig. Beyond it, the nightwind fungi that Dusk had spent years cultivating here had been smothered in water to keep the spores from escaping. The next two tripwires, the ones not intended to be obvious, had also been cut. "Nice work, kid," Dusk thought. He hadn't just avoided the traps, but disarmed them, in case he needed to flee quickly back this direction. However, someone really needed to teach the boy how to move without being trackable. Of course, those tracks could be a trap unto themselves, an attempt to make Dusk himself careless. And so he was extra careful as he edged forward. Yes, here the youth had left more footprints, broken stems and other signs. Something moved up above in the canopy. Dusk hesitated, squinting. A woman hung from the tree branches above, trapped in a net made of jellywire vines. They left someone numb, unable to move. So one of his traps had finally worked.
Hello?
She said. A woman, Dusk thought, suddenly feeling stupid. A smaller footprint, lighter step.
I want to make it perfectly clear, the woman said. I have no intention of stealing your birds or infringing upon your territory.
Dusk stepped closer in the dimming light. He recognized this woman. She was one of the clerks who had been at his meetings with the company.
You cut my tripwires, Dusk said.
Words felt odd in his mouth, and they came out ragged, as if he'd swallowed handfuls of dust, the result of weeks without speaking.
Yes, I did. I assumed you could replace them.
She hesitated.
Sorry?
Dusk settled back. The woman rotated slowly in her net, and he noticed an aviar clinging to the outside. Like his own birds, it was about as tall as three fists atop one another, though this one had subdued white and green plumage. A streamer, which was a breed that did not live on Patchy. He did not know much about them, other than that, like Kokorlii, they protected the mind from predators. The setting sun cast shadows, the sky darkening. Soon he would need to hunker down for the night, for darkness brought out the island's most dangerous of predators.
I promise,
the woman said from within her bindings. What was her name? He believed it had been told to him, but he did not recall. Something untraditional.
I really didn't want to steal from you. You remember me, don't you? We met back in the company halls.
He gave no reply.
Please, she said, I'd really rather not be hung by my ankles from a tree slathered with blood to attract predators, if it's all the same to you.
You are not a trapper.
Well, no, she said. You may have noticed my gender.
There have been female trappers.
One female trapper, Yalani, the Brave. I've heard her story 100 times. You may find it curious to know that almost every society has its myth of the female role reversal. She goes to war dressed as a man, or leads her father's armies into battle, or traps on an island. I'm convinced that such stories exist so that parents can tell their daughters, "You are not Yalani."
This woman spoke. A lot. People did that back on the Ilokin Islands. Her skin was dark, like his, and she had the sound of his people, the slight accent to her voice. He had heard it more and more when visiting the home isles. It was the accent of one who was educated.
"Can I get down?" she asked, voice bearing a faint tremor. "I cannot feel my hands. It is unsettling."
"What is your name?" Dusk asked. "I have forgotten it."
This was too much speaking. It hurt his ears. This place was supposed to be soft.
"Vati."
That's right. It was an improper name. Not a reference to her birth order and day of birth, but a name like the mainlanders used. That was not uncommon among his people now. He walked over and took the rope from the nearby tree, then lowered the net. The woman's AVR flapped down, screeching in annoyance, favoring one wing, obviously wounded. Vati hit the ground, a bundle of dark curls and green linen skirts. She stumbled to her feet, but fell back down again. Her skin would be numb for some 15 minutes from the touch of the vines. She sat there and wagged her hands as if to shake out the numbness.
So, no ankles and blood? She asked, hopeful.
That is a story parents tell to children, Dusk said. It is not something we actually do.
Oh.
If you had been another trapper, I would have killed you directly, rather than leaving you to avenge yourself upon me.
He walked over to her AVR, which opened its beak in a hissing posture, raising both wings as if to be bigger than it was. Sack chirped from his shoulder, but the bird didn't seem to care.
Yes, one wing was bloody.
Vati knew enough to care for the bird, however, which was pleasing. Some home islers were completely ignorant of their AVR's needs, treating them like accessories rather than intelligent creatures. Vati had pulled out the feathers near the wound, including a blood feather. She'd wrapped the wound with gauze. That wing didn't look good, however. Might be a fracture involved. He'd want to wrap both wings, prevent the creature from flying.
"Oh, Miris,"
Vati said, finally finding her feet.
"I tried to help her. We fell, you see, when the monster..."
"Pick her up," Dusk said, checking the sky. "Follow. Step where I step."
Vati nodded, not complaining, though her numbness would not have passed yet. She collected a small pack from the vines and straightened her skirts. She wore a tight vest above them, and the pack had some kind of metal tube sticking out of it. A map case? She fetched her AVR, who huddled happily on her shoulder. As Dusk led the way, she followed, and she did not attempt to attack him when his back was turned. Good. Darkness was coming upon them, but his safe camp was just ahead, and he knew by heart the steps to approach along this path. As they walked, Kokerlee fluttered down and landed on the woman's other shoulder, then began chirping in an amiable way. Dusk stopped, turning. The woman's own AVR moved down her dress, away from Kokerlee, to cling near her bodice. The bird hissed softly, but Kokerlee, oblivious as usual, continued to chirp happily. It was fortunate his breed was so mind-invisible. Even death ants would consider him no more edible than a piece of bark.
"Is this," Vati said, looking to Dusk, "yours? But of course, the one on your shoulder is not AVR."
Sack settled back, puffing up her feathers. No, her species was not AVR. Dusk continued to lead the way.
I have never seen a trapper carry a bird who was not from the islands, Vati said from behind.
It was not a question. Dusk, therefore, felt no need to reply. This safe camp, he had three total on the island, lay atop a short hill following a twisting trail. Here a stout gourd tree held aloft a single-room structure. Trees were one of the safer places to sleep on Patchy. The treetops were the domain of Aviar, and most of the large predators walked. Dusk lit his lantern, then held it aloft, letting the orange light bathe his home.
Up, he said to the woman.
She glanced over her shoulder into the darkening jungle. By the lantern light, he saw that the whites of her eyes were red from lack of sleep, despite the unconcerned smile she gave him before climbing up the stakes he'd planted in the tree. Her numbness should have worn off by now.
"How did you know?" he asked.
Vati hesitated, near to the trap door leading into his home.
"Know what?"
"Where my safe camp was. Who told you?"
"I followed the sound of water,"
she said, nodding toward the small spring that bubbled out of the mountainside here.
"When I found traps, I knew I was coming the right way."
Dusk frowned. One could not hear this water, as the stream vanished only a few hundred yards away, resurfacing in an unexpected location. Following it here, that would be virtually impossible. So she was lying, or was she just lucky?
"You wanted to find me," he said.
"I wanted to find someone," she said, pushing open the trap door, voice growing muffled as she climbed up into the building. "I figured that a trapper would be my only chance for survival."
Above, she stepped up to one of the netted windows, Coker Lee still on her shoulder.
"This is nice. Very roomy for a shack on a mountainside in the middle of a deadly jungle on an isolated island surrounded by monsters."
Dusk climbed up, holding the lantern in his teeth. The room at the top was perhaps 4 paces square, tall enough to stand in, but only barely.
"Shake out those blankets," he said, nodding toward the stack and setting down the lantern. "Then lift every cup and bowl on the shelf and check inside of them."
Her eyes widened.
"What am I looking for?"
"Death ants, scorpions, spiders, blood scratches."
He shrugged, putting sack on her perch by the window. "The room is built to be tight, but this is patchy. The father likes surprises." As she hesitantly set aside her pack and got to work, Dusk continued up another ladder to check the roof. There, a group of bird-sized boxes with nests inside and holes to allow the birds to come and go freely lay arranged in a double row. The animals would not stray far, except on special occasions, now that they had been raised with him handling them. Coker Lee landed on top of one of the homes, trilling, but softly, now that night had fallen. More coos and chirps came from the other boxes. Dusk climbed out to check each bird for hurt wings or feet. These aviar pairs were his life's work. The chicks each one hatched became his primary stock and trade. Yes, he would trap on the island, trying to find nests and wild chicks, but that was never as efficient as raising nests.
"Your name was Sixth, wasn't it?"
Vati said from below, voice accompanied by the sound of a blanket being shaken.
"It is."
"Large family,"
Vati noted. An ordinary family, or so it had once been. His father had been a 12th, and his mother an 11th.
"Sixth of what?"
Vati prompted below.
"Of the dusk."
"So you were born in the evening," Vati said. "I've always found the traditional name so, descriptive."
What a meaningless comment, Dusk thought. Why do home islers feel the need to speak when there is nothing to say? He moved on to the next nest, checking the two drowsy birds inside, then inspecting their droppings. They responded to his presence with happiness. An aviar raised around humans, particularly one that had lent its talent to a person at an early age, would always see people as part of their flock. These birds were not his companions, like Sack and Coker Lee, but they were still special to him.
"No insects in the blankets,"
Betty said, sticking her head up out of the trapdoor behind him, her own AVR on her shoulder.
The cups?
I'll get to those in a moment. So these are your breeding pairs, are they?
Obviously they were, so he didn't need to reply. She watched him check them. He felt her eyes on him. Finally, he spoke.
Why did your company ignore the advice we gave you? Coming here was a disaster.
Yes.
He turned to her.
Yes, she continued. This whole expedition will likely be a disaster. A disaster that takes us a step closer to our goal.
He checked Sissis Rue next, working by the light of the now rising moon.
Foolish.
Batty folded her arms before her on the roof of the building, torso still disappearing into the lit square of the trap door below.
Do you think that our ancestors learned to wayfind on the oceans without experiencing a few disasters along the way? Or what of the first trappers? You have knowledge passed down for generations, knowledge earned through trial and error. If the first trappers had considered it too foolish to explore, where would you be?
They were single men, well trained, not on a ship full of clerks and dock workers.
The world is changing, Sixth of the Dusk, she said softly. The people of the mainland grow hungry for AVR companions. Things once restricted to the very wealthy are within the reach of ordinary people. We've learned so much, yet the AVR are still an enigma. Why don't chicks raised on the home isles bestow talents? Why?
Foolish arguments, Dusk said, putting Sissis Rue back into her nest. I do not wish to hear them again.
And the ones above? She asked. What of their technology? The wonders they produce?
He hesitated, then took out a pair of thick gloves and gestured toward her AVR. Vatty looked at the white and green AVR, then made a comforting clicking sound, and took her in two hands. The bird suffered it with a few annoyed half-bites at Vatty's fingers. Dusk carefully took the bird in his gloved hands. For him, those bites would not be as timid, and undid Vatty's bandage. Then he cleaned the wound, much to the bird's protests, and carefully placed a new bandage. From there, he wrapped the bird's wings around its body with another bandage, not too tight, lest the creature be unable to breathe. She didn't like it, obviously, but flying would hurt that wing more, with the fracture. She'd eventually be able to bite off the bandage, but for now she'd get a chance to heal. Once done, he placed her with his other AVR, who made quiet, friendly chirps, calming the flustered bird. Batty seemed content to let her bird remain there for the time, though she watched the entire process with interest.
You may sleep in my safe camp tonight, Dusk said, turning back to her.
And then what? She asked. You turn me out into the jungle to die?
You did well on your way here, he said grudgingly.
She was not a trapper. A scholar should not have been able to do what she did.
You will probably survive.
I got lucky. I'd never make it across the entire island.
Dusk paused.
Across the island?
To the main company camp.
There are more of you?
Of course. You didn't think...
What happened?
Now who is the fool? He thought to himself. You should have asked this first. Talking. He had never been good with it. She shied away from him, eyes widening. Did he look dangerous? Perhaps he had barked that last question forcefully. No matter. She spoke, so she got what he needed.
We set up camp on the far beach, she said. We have two iron hulls armed with cannons watching the waters. Those can take on even a deep walker if they have to. 200 soldiers, half that number in scientists and merchants. We're determined to find out once and for all why the AVR must be born on one of the Pantheon Islands to be able to bestow talents. One team came down this direction to scout sites to place another fortress. The company is determined to hold Patchy against other interests. I thought the smaller expedition a bad idea, but had my own reasons for wanting to circle the island. So I went along. And then, the Deep Walker.
She looked sick. Dusk had almost stopped listening. 200 soldiers? crawling across Patchy like ants on a fallen piece of fruit. Unbearable. He thought of the quiet jungle broken by the sounds of their racketous voices, the sound of humans yelling at each other, clanging on metal, stomping about, like a city. A flurry of dark feathers announced Sack coming up from below and landing on the lip of the trap door beside Vatty. The black-plumed bird limped across the floor toward Dusk, stretching her wings, showing off the scars on her left. Flying even a dozen feet was a chore for her. Dusk reached down to scratch her neck. It was happening. An invasion. He had to find a way to stop it. Somehow. "I'm sorry, Dusk," Vatty said. "The trappers are fascinating to me. I've read of your ways, and I respect them. But this was going to happen someday. It's inevitable. The islands will be tamed. The Aviar are too valuable to leave in the hands of a couple hundred eccentric woodsmen. The chiefs, all 20 chiefs in council agreed to this plan," Vatty said. "I was there. If the Elykin do not secure these islands and the Aviar, someone else will." Dusk stared out into the night.
"Go and make certain there are no insects in the cups below."
"But..."
"Go," he said,
"and make certain there are no insects in the cups below." The woman sighed softly, but retreated into the room, leaving him with his Aviar. He continued to scratch Sack on the neck, seeking comfort in the familiar motion and in her presence. Dared he hope that the shadows would prove too deadly for the company and its iron-hulled ships? Vatty seemed confident.
"She did not tell me why she joined the scouting group."
She had seen a shadow, witnessed it destroying her team, but had still managed the presence of mind to find his camp. She was a strong woman. He would need to remember that. She was also a company type, as removed from his experience as a person could get. Soldiers, craftsmen, even chiefs he could understand. But these soft-spoken scribes, who had quietly conquered the world with a sword of commerce, they baffled him.
"Father," he whispered, "what do I do?"
Patchy gave no reply beyond the normal sounds of night. Creatures moving, hunting, rustling. At night the Aviar slept, and that gave opportunity to the most dangerous of the island's predators. In the distance a nightmaw called, its horrid screech echoing through the trees. Sack spread her wings, leaning down, head darting back and forth. The sound always made her tremble. It did the same to Dusk. He sighed and rose, placing Sack on his shoulder. He turned and almost stumbled as he saw his corpse at his feet. He came alert immediately. What was it? Vines in the tree branches? A spider dropping quietly from above? There wasn't supposed to be anything in his safe camp that could kill him. Sack screeched as if in pain. Nearby, his other Aviar cried out as well, a cacophony of squawks, screeches, chirps. No, it wasn't just them. All around, echoing in the distance, from both near and far, wild Aviar squawked. They rustled in their branches, a sound like a powerful wind blowing through the trees. Dusk spun about, holding his hands to his ears, eyes wide as corpses appeared around him. They piled high, one atop another, some bloated, some bloody, some skeletal, haunting him. Dozens upon dozens. He dropped to his knees, yelling. That put him eye to eye with one of his corpses. Only this one was not quite dead. Blood dripped from its lips as it tried to speak, mouthing words that Dusk did not understand. It vanished. They all did. Every last one. He spun about, wild, but saw no bodies. The sounds of the Aviar quieted, and his flock settled back into their nests. Dusk breathed in and out deeply, heart racing. He felt tense, as if at any moment a shadow would explode from the blackness around his camp and consume him. He anticipated it, felt it coming. He wanted to run. Run somewhere. What had that been? In all of his years with Sack, he had never seen anything like it. What could have upset all of the Aviar at once? Was it the night maw he had heard?
Don't be foolish, he thought. This was different. Different from anything you've seen. Different from anything that has been seen on Patchy.
But what? What had changed?
Sack had not settled down like the others. She stared northward, toward where Vatti had said the main camp of invaders was setting up.
Dusk stood, then clambered down into the room below, Sack on his shoulder.
What are your people doing?
Vatti spun at his harsh tone. She had been looking out the window northward.
I don't...
He took her by the front of her vest, pulling her toward him in a two-fisted grip, meeting her eyes from only a few inches away.
What are your people doing?
Her eyes widened, and he could feel her tremble in his grip, though she set her jaw and held his gaze. Scribes were not supposed to have grit like this. He had seen them scribbling away in their windowless rooms. Dusk tightened his grip on her vest, pulling the fabric so it dug into her skin, and found himself growling softly.
"Release me," she said, "and we will speak."
"Bah!"
he said, letting go. She dropped a few inches, hitting the floor with a thump. He hadn't realized he'd lifted her off the ground. She backed away, putting as much space between them as the room would allow. He stalked to the window, looking through the mesh screen at the night. His corpse dropped from the roof above, hitting the ground below. He jumped back, worried that it was happening again. It didn't. Not the same way as before. However, when he turned back into the room, his corpse lay in the corner, bloody lips parted, eyes staring sightlessly. The danger, whatever it was, had not passed. Vatti had sat down on the floor, holding her head, trembling. Had he frightened her that soundly? She did look tired, exhausted. She wrapped her arms around herself, and when she looked at him, there was a cast to her eyes that hadn't been there before, as if she were regarding a wild animal let off its chain. That seemed fitting.
"What do you know of the ones above?" she asked him.
"They live in the stars," Dusk said.
"We at the company have been meeting with them. We don't understand their ways. They look like us. At times they talk like us. But they have rules, laws that they won't explain. They refuse to sell us their marvels, but in like manner they seem forbidden from taking things from us, even in trade. They promise it some day when we are more advanced. It's like they think we are children."
"Why should we care?" Dusk said. "If they leave us alone, we will be better for it."
"You haven't seen the things they can do," she said softly, getting a distant look in her eyes. "We have barely worked out how to create ships that can sail on their own against the wind. But the ones above, they can sail the skies, sail the stars themselves. They know so much, and they won't tell us any of it."
She shook her head, reaching into the pocket of her skirt.
"They are after something, Dusk. What interest do we hold for them? From what I've heard them say, there are many other worlds like ours with cultures that cannot sail the stars. We are not unique. Yet the ones above come back here time and time again. They do want something. You can see it in their eyes."
"What is that?"
Dusk asked, nodding to the thing she took from her pocket. It rested in her palm like the shell of a clam, but had a mirror-like face on the top.
"It is a machine," she said, "like a clock, only it never needs to be wound, and it shows things."
"What things?"
"Well, it translates languages, ours into that of the ones above. It also shows the locations of Aviar."
"What?"
"It's like a map," she said. "It points the way to Aviar."
"That's how you found my camp," Dusk said, stepping toward her.
"Yes."
She rubbed her thumb across the machine's surface.
"We aren't supposed to have this. It was the possession of an emissary sent to work with us. He choked while eating a few months back. They can die, it appears, even of mundane causes. That changed how I view them. His kind have asked after his machines, and we will have to return them soon. But this one tells us what they are after. The Aviar. The ones above are always fascinated with them. I think they want to find a way to trade for the birds, a way their laws will allow. They hint that we might not be safe, that not everyone above follows their laws.
But why did the Aviar react like they did just now? Dusk said, turning back to the window. Why did
I see what I saw, what I'm still seeing to an extent? His corpse was there, wherever he looked, slumped by a tree outside, in the corner of the room, hanging out of the trap door in the roof. Sloppy. He should have closed that. Sack had pulled into his hair like she did when a predator was near.
There is a second machine, Vatti said.
Where?
He demanded.
On our ship.
The direction the Aviar had looked.
The second machine is much larger, Vatti said. This one in my hand has limited range. The larger one can create an enormous map, one of an entire island, then write out a paper with a copy of that map. That map will include a dot marking every Aviar.
And
we're going to engage the machine tonight, she said. It takes hours to prepare, like an oven growing hot before it's ready. The schedule was to turn it on tonight just after sunset so we could use it in the morning.
The others, Dusk demanded. They'd use it without you?
She grimaced.
Happily. Captain Eusto probably did a dance when I didn't return from scouting. He's been worried I would take control of this expedition. But the machine isn't harmful. It merely locates Aviar.
Did it do that before? He demanded, waving toward the night. When you last used it, did it draw the attention of all the Aviar? Discomfort them?
Well, no, she said. But the moment of discomfort has passed, hasn't it? I'm sure it's nothing.
Nothing. Sack quivered on his shoulder. Dusk saw death all around him. The moment they had engaged that machine, the corpses had piled up. If they used it again, the results would be horrible. Dusk knew it. He could feel it.
We're going to stop them, he said.
What? Vatti asked. Tonight?
Yes,
Dusk said, walking to a small hidden cabinet in the wall. He pulled it open and began to pick through the supplies inside. A second lantern, extra oil.
That's insane, Vatti said. Nobody travels the islands at night.
I've done it once before, with my uncle.
His uncle had died on that trip.
You can't be serious, Dusk. The night maws are out. I've heard them.
Night maws track mines, Dusk said, stuffing supplies into his pack. They are almost completely deaf and close to blind. If we move quickly and cut across the center of the island, we can be to your camp by morning. We can stop them from using the machine again.
But why would we want to?
He shouldered the pack.
Because if we don't, it will destroy the island.
She frowned at him, cocking her head.
You can't know that. Why do you think you know that?
Your Aviar will have to remain here with that wound, he said, ignoring the question. She would not be able to fly anyway if something happened to us.
The same argument could be made for Sack, but he would not be without the bird.
I will return her to you after we have stopped the machine. Come.
He walked to the floor hatch and pulled it open. Vatti rose, but pressed back against the wall.
I'm staying here.
The people of your company won't believe me, he said. You will have to tell them to stop. You are coming.
Vatti licked her lips in what seemed to be a nervous habit. She glanced to the sides, looking for escape, then back at him. Right then, Dusk noticed his corpse hanging from the pegs in the tree beneath him. He jumped.
What was that?
She demanded.
Nothing.
You keep glancing to the sides, Vatti said. What do you think you see, Dusk?
We're going. Now.
You've been alone on the island for a long time, she said, obviously trying to make her voice soothing. You're upset about our arrival. You aren't thinking clearly. I understand.
Dusk drew in a deep breath. Sack, show her.
The bird launched from his shoulder, flapping across the room, landing on Vati. She turned to the bird, frowning. Then she gasped, falling to her knees. Vati huddled against the wall, eyes darting from side to side, mouth working, but no words coming out. Dusk left her to it for a short time, then raised his arm. Sack returned to him on black wings, dropping a single dark feather to the floor. She settled in again on his shoulder. That much flying was difficult for her.
"What was that?" Vati demanded.
"Come," Dusk said, taking his pack and climbing down out of the room. Vati scrambled to the open hatch.
"No, tell me, what was that?"
"You saw your corpse."
"All about me, everywhere I looked."
"Sack grants that talent."
"There is no such talent."
Dusk looked up at her, halfway down the pegs.
"You have seen your death. That is what will happen if your friends use their machine. Death. All of us. The AVR, everyone living here. I do not know why, but I know that it will come."
"You discovered a new AVR," Vati said. "How? When?"
"Hand me the lantern," Dusk said.
Looking numb, she obeyed, handing it down. He put it into his teeth and descended the pegs to the ground. Then he raised the lantern high, looking down the slope. The inky jungle at night, like the depths of the ocean. He shivered, then whistled. Coker Lee fluttered down from above, landing on his other shoulder. He would hide their minds, and with that they had a chance. It would still not be easy. The things of the jungle relied upon mind sense, but many could still hunt by scent or other senses. Vati scrambled down the pegs behind him, her pack over her shoulder, the strange tube peeking out.
"You have two AVR," she said. "You use them both at once?"
"My uncle had three."
"How was that even possible?"
"They like trappers."
So many questions. Could she not think about what the answers might be before asking?
"We're actually going to do this," she said, whispering as if to herself. "The jungle at night. I should stay. I should refuse."
"You've seen your death if you do."
"I've seen what you claim is my death. A new AVR. It has been centuries."
Though her voice still sounded reluctant, she walked after him as he strode down the slope and past his traps, entering the jungle again. His corpse sat at the base of a tree. That made him immediately look for what could kill him here, but Sack's senses seemed to be off. The island's impending death was so overpowering it seemed to be smothering smaller dangers. He might not be able to rely upon her visions until the machine was destroyed. The thick jungle canopy swallowed them, hot, even at night. The ocean breezes didn't reach this far inland. That left the air feeling stagnant, and it dripped with the scents of the jungle. Fungus, rotting leaves, the perfumes of flowers. The accompaniment to those scents was the sounds of an island coming alive, a constant crinkling in the underbrush, like the sound of maggots writhing in a pile of dry leaves. The lantern's light did not seem to extend as far as it should. Vati pulled up close behind him.
"Why did you do this before?" she whispered. "The other time you went out at night."
More questions.
But sounds, fortunately, were not too dangerous.
"I was wounded," Dusk whispered. "We had to get from one safe camp to the other to recover my uncle's store of antivenom."
Because Dusk, hands trembling, had dropped the other flask.
"You survived it? Well, obviously you did, I mean. I'm surprised is all."
She seemed to be talking to fill the air.
"They could be watching us," she said, looking into the darkness. "Night moths."
"They are not."
"How can you know?"
she asked, voice hushed.
"Anything could be out there in that darkness."
"If the night moths had seen us, we'd be dead. That is how I know."
He shook his head,
sliding out his machete and cutting away a few branches before them. Any could hold death ants skittering across their leaves. In the dark, it would be difficult to spot them, and so brushing against foliage seemed a poor decision.
"We won't be able to avoid it," he thought, leading the way down through a gully thick with mud.
He had to step on stones to keep from sinking in. Batty followed with remarkable dexterity.
"We have to go quickly. I can't cut down every branch in our way."
He hopped off a stone and onto the bank of the gully, and there passed his corpse, sinking into the mud. Nearby, he spotted a second corpse, so translucent it was nearly invisible. He raised his lantern, hoping it wasn't happening again. Others did not appear, just the two. And the very faint image? Yes, that was a sinkhole there. Sack chirped softly, and he fished in his pocket for a seed to give her. She had figured out how to send him help. The fainter images were immediate dangers. He would have to watch for those.
"Thank you," he whispered to her.
"That bird of yours," Batty said, speaking softly in the gloom of night. "Are there others?"
They climbed out of the gully, continuing on, crossing a krell trail in the night. He stopped them just before they wandered into a patch of death ants. Batty looked at the trail of tiny yellow insects, moving in a straight line.
"Dusk?" she asked as they rounded the ants. "Are there others? Why haven't you brought any chicks to market?"
"I do not have any chicks."
"So you found only one?" she asked.
"Questions, questions," buzzing around him like flies. "Don't be foolish," he told himself, shoving down his annoyance. "You would ask the same if you saw someone with a new AVR."
He had tried to keep Sack a secret. For years he hadn't even brought her with him when he left the island. But with her hurt wing, he hadn't wanted to abandon her. Deep down, he'd known he couldn't keep his secret forever.
"There are many like her," he said, "but only she has a talent to bestow."
Batty stopped in place as he continued to cut them a path. He turned back, looking at her alone on the new trail. He had given her the lantern to hold.
"That's a mainlander bird," she said. She held up the light. "I knew it was when I first saw it, and I assumed it wasn't an AVR because mainlander birds can't bestow talents."
Dusk turned back and continued cutting.
"You brought a mainlander chick to the Pantheon," Batty whispered behind. "And it gained a talent."
With a hack, he brought down a branch, then continued on. Again, she had not asked a question, so he needed not answer. Batty hurried to keep up, the glow of the lantern tossing his shadow before him as she stepped up behind.
"Surely someone else has tried it before. Surely—"
He did not know.
"But why would they?"
she continued quietly, as if to herself.
"The AVR are special. Everyone knows the separate breeds and what they do. Why assume that a fish would learn to breathe air if raised on land? Why assume a non-AVR would become one if raised on Patchy?"
They continued through the night. Dusk led them around many dangers, though he found that he needed to rely greatly upon Sack's help.
"Do not follow that stream which has your corpse bobbing in its waters. Do not touch that tree. The bark is poisonous with rot. Turn from that path. Your corpse shows a death ant bite."
Sack did not speak to him, but each message was clear. When he stopped to let Vatty drink from her canteen, he held Sack and found her trembling. She did not peck at him, as was usual when he enclosed her in his hands. They stood in a small clearing, pure dark all around them, the sky shrouded in clouds. He heard distant rainfall on the trees, not uncommon here. Night moths screeched, one, then another. They only did that when they had made a kill, or when they were seeking to frighten prey. Often krell herds slept near AVR roosts. Frighten away the birds, and you could sense the krell. Batty had taken out her tube. Not a scroll case, and not something scholarly at all, considering the way she held it as she poured something into its end. Once done, she raised it like one would a weapon. Beneath her feet, Dusk's body lay mangled. He did not ask after Vatti's weapon, not even as she took some kind of short, slender spear and fitted it into the top end. No weapon could penetrate the thick skin of a night maw. You either avoided them, or you died. Coker Lee fluttered down to his shoulder, chirping away. He seemed confused by the darkness. Why were they out like this at night when birds normally made no noise?
"We must keep moving,"
Dusk said, placing Sack on his other shoulder and taking out his machete.
"You realize that your bird changes everything,"
Vatti said quietly, joining him, shouldering her pack and carrying her tube in the other hand.
"There will be a new kind of aviar,"
Dusk whispered, stepping over his corpse.
"That's the least of it."
"Dusk, we assumed that chicks raised away from these islands did not develop their abilities because they were not around others to train them. We assumed that their abilities were innate, like our ability to speak. It's inborn, but we require help from others to develop it."
"That can still be true," Dusk said. "Other species such as Sack can merely be trained to speak."
"And your bird? Was it trained by others?"
"Perhaps."
He did not say what he really thought. It was a thing of trappers. He noted a corpse on the ground before them. It was not his. He held up a hand immediately, stilling Vatti as she continued on to ask another question.
What was this?
The meat had been picked off much of the skeleton, and the clothing lay strewn about, ripped open by animals that feasted. Small fungus-like plants had sprouted around the ground near it, tiny red tendrils reaching up to enclose parts of the skeleton. He looked up at the great tree, at the foot of which rested the corpse. The flowers were not in bloom. Dusk released his breath.
"What is it?" Vatti whispered. "Death ants?"
"No. Patchy's finger."
She frowned.
"Is that some kind of curse?"
"It is a name,"
Dusk said, stepping forward carefully to inspect the corpse. Machete, boots, rugged gear. One of his colleagues had fallen. He thought he recognized the man from the clothing, an older trapper named First of the Sky.
"The name of a person?"
Vatti asked, peeking over his shoulder.
"The name of a tree,"
Dusk said, poking at the corpse's clothing, careful of insects that might be lurking inside.
"Raise the lamp."
"I've never heard of that tree,"
she said skeptically.
"They are only on Patchy."
"I have read a lot about the flora on these islands."
"Here you are a child. Light."
She sighed, raising it for him. He used a stick to prod at pockets on the ripped clothing. This man had been killed by a pack of Tuskrun, larger predators, almost as large as a man, that prowled mostly by day. Their movement patterns were predictable unless one happened across one of Patchy's fingers in bloom. "There." He found a small book in the man's pocket. Dusk raised it, then backed away. Vatti peered over his shoulder. Homeilers stood so close to each other. Did she need to stand right by his elbow? He checked the first pages, finding a list of dates. Yes, judging by the last date written down, this man was only a few days dead. The pages after that detailed the locations of Sky's safe camps, along with explanations of the traps guarding each one. The last page contained the farewell. "I am First of the Sky, taken by Patchy at last. I have a brother on Suloko. Care for them, rival." Few words. Few words were good. Dusk carried a book like this himself, and he had said even less on his last page.
"He wants you to care for his family?" Vatti asked.
"Don't be stupid," Dusk said, tucking the book away. "His birds."
"That's sweet," Vatti said. "I'd always heard that trappers were incredibly territorial."
"We are," he said, noting how she said it.
Again her tone made it seem as if she considered trappers to be like animals.
"But our birds might die without care. They are accustomed to humans. Better to give them to a rival than to let them die."
"Even if that rival is the one who killed you?" Vatti asked. "The traps you set, the ways you try to interfere with one another."
"It is our way."
That is an awful excuse, she said, looking up at the tree. She was right. The tree was massive, with drooping fronds. At the end of each one was a large closed blossom as long as two hands put together.
You don't seem worried, she noted, though the plant seems to have killed that man.
These are only dangerous when they bloom.
Spores? She asked.
No.
He picked up the fallen machete, but left the rest of Sky's things alone. Let Patchy claim him.
Father did so like to murder his children.
Dusk continued onward, leading Vatty, ignoring his corpse draped across a log.
Dusk?
Vatty asked, raising the lantern and hurrying to him.
If not spores, then how does the tree kill?
So many questions.
My life is about questions, she replied, and about answers. If my people are going to work on this island...
He hacked at some plants with the machete.
It is going to happen, she said, more softly. I'm sorry, Dusk. You can't stop the world from changing. Perhaps my expedition will be defeated, but others will come.
Because of the ones above, he snapped.
They may spur it, Vatty said. Truly, when we finally convince them we are developed enough to be traded with, we will sail the stars as they do. But change will happen even without them. The world is progressing. One man cannot slow it, no matter how determined he is.
He stopped in the path.
You cannot stop the tides from changing, Dusk, no matter how determined you are.
His mother's words. Some of the last he remembered from her. Dusk continued on his way. Vatty followed. He would need her, though a treacherous piece of him whispered that she would be easy to end. With her would go her questions, and more importantly, her answers. The ones he suspected she was very close to discovering.
You cannot change it.
He could not. He hated that it was so. He wanted so badly to protect this island, as his kind had done for centuries. He worked this jungle, he loved its birds, was fond of its scents and sounds, despite all else. How he wished he could prove to Patchy that he and the others were worthy of these shores. Perhaps then...
Bah!
Well, killing this woman would not provide any real protection for the island. Besides, had he sunk so low that he would murder a helpless scribe in cold blood? He would not even do that to another trapper, unless they approached his camp and did not retreat.
The blossoms can think,
he found himself saying as he turned them away from a mound that showed the Tuscron pack had been rooting here.
The fingers of Patchy. The trees themselves are not dangerous, even when blooming, but they attract predators, imitating the thoughts of a wounded animal that is full of pain and worry.
Vatty gasped. A plant? She said. That broadcasts a mental signature? Are you certain?
Yes.
I need one of those blossoms.
The light shook as she turned to go back. Dusk spun and caught her by the arm.
We must keep moving.
But
you will have another chance.
He took a deep breath.
Your people will soon infest this island like maggots on carrion. You will see other trees. Tonight we must go. Dawn approaches.
He let go of her and turned back to his work. He had judged her wise for a home isler. Perhaps she would listen. She did. She followed behind. Patchy's fingers. First of the sky, the dead trapper should not have died in that place. Truly the trees were not that dangerous. They lived by opening many blossoms and attracting predators to come feast. The predators would then fight one another, and the tree would feed off the corpses. Sky must have stumbled across a tree as it was beginning to flower and got caught in what came. His aviar had not been enough to shield so many open blossoms. Who would have expected a death like that? After years on the island, surviving much more terrible dangers, to be caught by those simple flowers. It almost seemed a mockery on Patchy's part of the poor man. Dusk and Vatty's path continued, and soon grew steeper. They'd need to go uphill for a while before crossing to the downward slope that would lead to the other side of the island.
Their trail, fortunately, would avoid Patchy's main peak, the point of the wedge that jutted up the easternmost side of the island. His camp had been near the south, and Batty's would be to the northeast, letting them skirt around the base of the wedge before arriving on the other beach. They fell into a rhythm, and she was quiet for a time. Eventually, atop a particularly steep incline, he nodded for a break and squatted down to drink from his canteen. On Patchy, one did not simply sit, without care, upon a stump or log to rest. Consumed by worry and not a little frustration, he didn't notice what Vatty was doing until it was too late. She'd found something tucked into a branch, a long, colorful feather, a mating plume. Dusk leaped to his feet. Vatty reached up toward the lower branches of the tree. A set of spikes on ropes dropped from a nearby tree as Vatty pulled the branch. They swung down as Dusk reached her, one arm thrown in the way. A spike hit, the long, thin nail ripping into his skin and jutting out the other side, bloodied and stopping a hair from Vatty's cheek. She screamed. Many predators on Patchy were hard of hearing, but still that wasn't wise. Dusk didn't care. He yanked the spike from his skin, unconcerned with the bleeding for now, and checked the other spikes on the drop rope trap. No poison. Blessedly, they had not been poisoned.
"Your arm," Vatty said.
He grunted. It didn't hurt. Yet. She began fishing in her pack for a bandage, and he accepted her ministrations without complaint or groan, even as the pain came upon him.
"I'm so sorry," Vatty sputtered. "I found a mating plume. That meant an abeyon nest, so I thought to look in the tree. Have we stumbled across another trapper's safe camp?"
She was babbling out words as she worked. Seemed appropriate. When he grew nervous, he grew even more quiet. She would do the opposite. She was good with the bandage, again surprising him. The wound had not hit any major arteries. He would be fine, though using his left hand would not be easy. This would be an annoyance. When she was done, looking sheepish and guilty, he reached down and picked up the mating plume she had dropped. "This," he said with a harsh whisper, holding it up before her, "is the symbol of your ignorance. On the Pantheon Islands, nothing is easy. Nothing is simple. That plume was placed by another trapper to catch someone who does not deserve to be here, someone who thought to find an easy prize. You cannot be that person. Never move without asking yourself, is this too easy?" She paled. Then she took the feather in her fingers. "Come." He turned and walked on their way. That was the speech for an apprentice, he realized, upon their first major mistake, a ritual among trappers. What had possessed him to give it to her? She followed behind, head bowed, appropriately shamed. She didn't realize the honor he had just paid her, if unconsciously. They walked onward, an hour or more passing. By the time she spoke, for some reason, he almost welcomed the words breaking upon the sounds of the jungle.
"I'm sorry."
"You need not be sorry," he said. "Only careful."
"I understand."
She took a deep breath, following behind him on the path.
"And I am sorry. Not just about your arm, about this island, about what is coming. I think it inevitable, but I do wish that it did not mean the end of such a grand tradition."
"I... words." He hated trying to find words. "It was not dusk when I was born," he finally said, then hacked down a swamp vine and held his breath against the noxious fumes that it released toward him. They were only dangerous for a few moments.
"Excuse me?"
Vatty asked, keeping her distance from the swamp vine.
"You were born..."
"My mother did not name me for the time of day. I was named because my mother saw the dusk of our people. The sun will soon set on us, she often told me." He looked back at Vatty, letting her pass him and enter a small clearing. Oddly, she smiled at him. Why had he found those words to speak? He followed into the clearing, concerned at himself. He had not given those words to his uncle. Only his parents knew the source of his name. He was not certain why he'd told this scribe from an evil company. but it did feel good to have said them. A night maw broke through between two trees behind Vati. The enormous beast must have been as tall as a tree if it had stood upright. Instead, it leaned forward in a prowling posture, powerful legs behind bearing most of its weight, its two clawed forelegs ripping up the ground. It reached forward, its long neck, beak open, razor sharp and deadly. It looked like a bird, in the same way that a wolf looked like a lapdog. He threw his machete, an instinctive reaction, for he did not have time for thought. He did not have time for fear. That snapping beak, as tall as a door, would have the two of them dead in moments. His machete glanced off the beak and actually cut the creature on the side of the head. That drew its attention, making it hesitate for just a moment. Dusk leaped for Vati. She stepped back from him, setting the butt of her tube against the ground. He needed to pull her away to... The explosion deafened him. Smoke bloomed around Vati, who stood, wide-eyed, having dropped the lantern, oil spilling. The sudden sound stunned Dusk, and he almost collided with her as the night maw lurched and fell, skidding, the ground thumping from the impact. Dusk found himself on the ground. He scrambled to his feet, backing away from the twitching night maw mere inches from him. Lit by flickering lantern light, it was all leathery skin that was bumpy like that of a bird who had lost her feathers. It was dead. Vati had killed it. She said something. Vati had killed a night maw. Dusk! Her voice seemed distant. He raised a hand to his forehead, which had belatedly begun to prickle with sweat. His wounded arm throbbed, but he was otherwise tense. He felt as if he should be running. He had never wanted to be so close to one of these. Never! She'd actually killed it. He turned toward her, his eyes wide. Vati was trembling, but she covered it well.
"So, that worked," she said. "We weren't certain it would, even though we'd prepared these specifically for the night maws."
"It's like a cannon," Dusk said. "Like from one of the ships, only in your hands."
"Yes."
He turned back toward the beast. Actually, it wasn't dead, not completely. It twitched and let out a plaintive screech that shocked him, even with his hearing muffled. The weapon had fired that spear right into the beast's chest. The night maw quaked and thrashed a weak leg.
"We could kill them all," Dusk said.
He turned, then rushed over to Vati, taking her with his right hand, the arm that wasn't wounded.
"With those weapons, we could kill them all. Every night maw. Maybe the shadows, too."
"Well, yes, it has been discussed. However, they are important parts of the ecosystem on these islands. Removing the apex predators could have undesirable results."
"Undesirable results?" Dusk ran his left hand through his hair. "They'd be gone. All of them. I don't care what other problems you think it would cause. They would all be dead."
Vati snorted, picking up the lantern and stamping out the fires it had started.
"I thought trappers were connected to nature."
"We are. That's how I know we would all be better off without any of these things."
"You are disabusing me of many romantic notions about your kind, Dusk," she said, circling the dying beast.
Dusk whistled, holding up his arm. Kokerlii fluttered down from the high branches. In the chaos and explosion, Dusk had not seen the bird fly away. Sack still clung to his shoulder with a death grip, her claws digging into his skin through the cloth. He hadn't noticed. Kokerlii landed on his arm and gave an apologetic chirp.
"It wasn't your fault," Dusk said soothingly. "They prowl the night. Even when they cannot sense our minds, they can smell us."
Their sense of smell was said to be incredible. This one had come up the trail behind them. It must have crossed their path and followed it. Dangerous. His uncle always claimed the night maws were growing smarter, that they knew they could not hunt men only by their minds.
"I should have taken us across more streams," Dusk thought,
reaching up and rubbing Sack's neck to soothe her.
"It just isn't time."
His corpse lay wherever he looked, draped across a rock, hanging from the vines of trees, slumped beneath the dying night maw's claw. The beast trembled once more, then amazingly,
it lifted its gruesome head and let out a last screech. Not as loud as those that normally sounded in the night, but bone-chilling and horrid. Dusk stepped back despite himself, and Sack chirped nervously. Other night moth screeches rose in the night, distant. That sound. He had been trained to recognize that sound as the sound of death. "We're going," he said, stalking across the ground and pulling Vati away from the dying beast, which had lowered its head and fallen silent.
"Dusk?"
She did not resist as he pulled her away. One of the other night moths sounded again in the night. Was it closer?
"Oh, Patchy, please," Dusk thought. "No, not this."
He pulled her faster, reaching for his machete at his side, but it was not there. He had thrown it. He took out the one he had gathered from his fallen rival, then dragged her out of the clearing back into the jungle, moving quickly. He could no longer worry about brushing against death ants. A greater danger was coming. The calls of death came again.
"Are they getting closer?"
Vati asked. Dusk did not answer. It was a question, but he did not know the answer. At least his hearing was recovering. He released her hand, moving more quickly, almost at a trot, faster than he ever wanted to go through the jungle, day or night.
"Dusk,"
Vati hissed.
"Will they come? To the call of the dying one? Is that something they do?"
"How should I know? I have never known one of them to be killed before."
He saw the tube, again carried over her shoulder, lit by the light of the lantern she carried. That gave him pause, though his instincts screamed at him to keep moving, and he felt a fool.
"Your weapon," he said. "You can use it again?"
"Yes," she said. "Once more."
"Once more?"
A half-dozen screeches sounded in the night.
"Yes,"
she replied.
"I only brought 3 spears and enough powder for 3 shots. I tried firing one at the shadow. It didn't do much."
He spoke no further, ignoring his wounded arm. The bandage was in need of changing, and towing her through the jungle. The calls came again and again, agitated. How did one escape night moths? His aviar clung to him, a bird on each shoulder. He had to leap over his corpse as they traversed a gulch and came up the other side.
"How do you escape them?" he thought, remembering his uncle's training. "You don't draw their attention in the first place."
They were fast. Kokoli would hide his mind, but if they picked up his trail at the dead one, water. He stopped in the night, turning right, then left. Where would he find a stream? Patchy was an island. Fresh water came from rainfall, mostly. The largest lake, the only one, was up the wedge, toward the peak. Along the eastern side, the island rose to some heights with cliffs on all sides. Rain collected there in Patchy's eye. The river was his tears. It was a dangerous place to go with Vati in tow. Their path had skirted the slope up the heights, heading across the island toward the northern beach. They were close. Those screeches behind him spurred him on. Patchy would just have to forgive him for what came next. Dusk seized Vati's hand and towed her in a more eastern direction. She did not complain, though she did keep looking over her shoulder. The screeches grew closer. He ran. He ran as he had never expected to do on Patchy, wild and reckless, leaping over troughs, around fallen logs coated in moss, through the dark underbrush, scaring away meekers and startling aviar slumbering in the branches above. It was foolish. It was crazy. But did it matter? Somehow he knew those other things would not claim him. The kings of Patchy hunted him. Lesser dangers would not dare steal from their betters. Vati followed with difficulty. Those skirts were trouble, but she caught up to him each time Dusk had to occasionally stop and cut their way through underbrush. Urgent, frantic. He expected her to keep up, and she did. A piece of him, buried deep beneath the terror, was impressed. This woman would have made a fantastic trapper. Instead, she would probably destroy all trappers. He froze as screeches sounded behind, so close. Vati gasped, and Dusk turned back to his work. Not far to go. He hacked through a dense patch of undergrowth and ran on, sweat streaming down the sides of his face. Jostling light came from Vati's lantern behind.
The scene before him was one of horrific shadows dancing on the jungle's boughs, leaves, ferns, and rocks.
"This is your fault, Patchy," he thought with an unexpected fury.
The screeches seemed almost on top of him. Was that breaking brush he could hear behind?
"We are your priests, and yet you hate us. You hate all."
Dusk broke from the jungle and out onto the banks of the river. Small by mainland standards, but it would do. He led Vati right into it, splashing into the cold waters. He turned upstream. What else could he do? Downstream would lead closer to those sounds, the calls of death.
"Of the dusk," he thought. "Of the dusk."
The waters came only to their calves, bitter cold. The coldest water on the island, though he did not know why. They slipped and scrambled as they ran, best they could, upriver. They passed through some narrows, with lichen-covered rock walls on either side, twice as tall as a man, then burst out into the basin. A place men did not go. A place he had visited only once. A cool emerald lake rested here, sequestered. Dusk towed Vati to the side, out of the river, towards some brush. Perhaps she would not see. He huddled down with her, raising a finger to his lips, then turned down the light of the lantern she still held. Night moths could not see well, but perhaps the dim light would help, in more ways than one. They waited there, on the shore of the small lake, hoping that the water had washed away their scent, hoping the night moths would grow confused or distracted. For one thing about this place was that the basin had steep walls, and there was no way out other than the river. If the night moths came up it, Dusk and Vati would be trapped. Screeches sounded. The creatures had reached the river. Dusk waited in near darkness and so squeezed his eyes shut. He prayed to Patchy, whom he loved, whom he hated. Vati gasped softly.
"What?"
So she had seen. Of course she had. She was a seeker, a learner, a questioner. Why must men ask so many questions?
"Dusk, there are aviar here, in the branches, hundreds of them."
She spoke in a hushed, frightened tone. Even as they awaited death itself, she saw and could not help speaking.
"Have you seen them? What is this place?"
She hesitated.
"So many juveniles, barely able to fly."
"They come here," he whispered. "Every bird from every island. In their youth, they must come here."
He opened his eyes, looking up. He had turned down the lantern, but it was still bright enough to see them roosting there. Some stirred at the light and the sound. They stirred more as the night moths screeched below. Sack chirped on his shoulder, terrified. Coquerlie, for once, had nothing to say.
"Every bird from every island," Vati said, putting it together. "They all come here, to this place. Are you certain?"
"Yes."
It was a thing that trappers knew. You could not capture a bird before it had visited Patchy. Otherwise, it would be able to bestow no talent.
"They come here," she said. "We knew they migrated between islands. Why do they come here?"
Was there any point in holding back now? She would figure it out. Still, he did not speak. Let her do so.
"They gain their talents here, don't they?" she asked. "How? Is it where they are trained? Is this how you made a bird who was not an aviar into one? You brought a hatchling here and then..."
She frowned, raising her lantern.
"I recognize those trees. They are the ones you called Patchy's fingers."
A dozen of them grew here, the largest concentration on the island, and beneath them their fruit littered the ground, much of it eaten, some of it only halfway so, bites taken out by birds of all stripes. Vati saw him looking and frowned.
"The fruit?" she asked.
"Worms," he whispered in reply.
A light seemed to go on in her eyes.
"It's not the birds. It never has been. It's a parasite. They carry a parasite that bestows talents. That's why those raised away from the islands cannot gain the abilities,
and why a mainland bird you brought here could.
Yes.
This changes everything, Dusk. Everything.
Yes. Of the Dusk. Born during that dusk or bringer of it. What had he done?
Downriver, the night moss screeches drew closer. They had decided to search upriver. They were clever, more clever than men off the islands thought them to be. Vatty gasped, turning toward the small river canyon.
Isn't this dangerous? She whispered. The trees are blooming. The night moss will come. But no. So many aviar. They can hide those blossoms, like they do a man's mind.
No, he said. All minds in this place are invisible. Always. Regardless of aviar.
But how? Why? The worms?
Dusk didn't know, and for now didn't care.
I am trying to protect you, Patchy.
Dusk looked toward Patchy's fingers.
I need to stop the men and their device. I know it. Why? Why do you hunt me?
Perhaps it was because he knew so much, too much, more than any man had known. For he had asked questions.
Men and their questions.
They're coming up the river, aren't they? She asked.
The answer seemed obvious. He did not reply.
No, she said, standing. I won't die with this knowledge, Dusk. I won't. There must be a way.
There is, he said, standing beside her.
He took a deep breath.
So I finally pay for it.
He took Sack carefully in his hand and placed her on Vatty's shoulder. He pried Coquelie free, too.
What are you doing?
Vatty asked.
I will go as far as I can, Dusk said, handing Coquelie toward her.
The bird bit with annoyance at his hands, although never strong enough to draw blood.
You will need to hold him. He will try to follow me.
No, wait. We can hide in the lake. They
will find us, Dusk said. It isn't deep enough by far to hide us.
But you can't.
They are nearly here, woman, he said,
forcing Coquelie into her hands.
The men of the company will not listen to me if I tell them to turn off the device. You are smart. You can make them stop. You can reach them. With Coquelie, you can reach them. Be ready to go.
She looked at him, stunned, but she seemed to realize that there was no other way. She stood, holding Coquelie in two hands as he pulled out the Journal of First of the Sky, then his own book that listed where his aviar were, and tucked them into her pack. Finally, he stepped back into the river. He could hear a rushing sound downstream. He would have to go quickly to reach the end of the canyon before they arrived. If he could draw them out into the jungle even a short ways to the south, that he could slip away. As he entered the stream, his visions of death finally vanished. No more corpses bobbing in the water, lying on the banks. Sack had realized what was happening. She gave a final chirp. He started to run. One of Patchy's fingers, growing right next to the mouth of the canyon, was blooming.
Wait!
He should not have stopped, as Vatty yelled at him. He should have continued on, for time was so slim. However, the sight of that flower, along with her yell, made him hesitate. The flower. It struck him as it must have struck Vatty. An idea. Vatty ran for her pack, letting go of Coquelie, who immediately flew to his shoulder and started chirping at him in annoyed chastisement. Dusk didn't listen. He yanked the flower off. It was as large as a man's head, with a large bulging part at the center. It was invisible in this basin, like they all were.
A flower that can think, Vatty said, breathing quickly, fishing in her pack. A flower that can draw the attention of predators.
Dusk pulled out his rope as she brought out her weapon and prepared it. He lashed the flower to the end of the spear sticking out slightly from the tube. Night moss screeches echoed up the cavern. He could see their shadows, hear them splashing. He stumbled back from Vatty as she crouched down, set the weapon's butt against the ground, and pulled a lever at the base. The explosion, once again, nearly deafened him. Aviar all around the rim of the basin screeched and called in fright, taking wing. A storm of feathers and flapping ensued, and through the middle of it, Vatty's spear shot into the air, flower on the end. It arced out over the canyon into the night. Dusk grabbed her by the shoulder and pulled her back along the river into the lake itself. They slipped into the shallow water, Kokerlee on his shoulder, Sack on hers. They left a lantern burning, giving a quiet light to the suddenly empty basin. The lake was not deep, 2 or 3 feet. Even crouching, it didn't cover them completely. The night moths stopped in the canyon. His lantern light showed a couple of them in the shadows, large as huts, turning and watching the sky. They were smart, but like the Meekers, not as smart as men.
Patchy, Dusk thought. Patchy, please.
The night moths turned back down the canyon, following the mental signature broadcast by the flowering plant. And as Dusk watched, his corpse bobbing in the water nearby grew increasingly translucent, then faded away entirely. Dusk counted to 100, then slipped from the waters. Vati, sodden in her skirts, did not speak as she grabbed the lantern. They left the weapon, its shots expended. The calls from the night moths grew farther and farther away as Dusk led the way out of the canyon, then directly north, slightly downslope. He kept expecting the screeches to turn and follow. They did not. The company fortress was a horridly impressive sight. A work of logs and cannons right at the edge of the water, guarded by an enormous iron-hulled ship. Smoke rose from it, the burning of morning cook fires. A short distance away, what must have been a dead shadow rotted in the sun, its mountainous carcass draped half in the water, half out. He didn't see his own corpse anywhere, though on the final leg of their trip to the fortress he had seen it several times. Always in a place of immediate danger. Sack's visions had returned to normal. Dusk turned back to the fortress, which he did not enter. He preferred to remain on the rocky, familiar shore, perhaps 20 feet from the entrance, his wounded arm aching as the company people rushed out through the gate to meet Vati. Their scouts on the upper walls kept careful watch on Dusk. A trapper was not to be trusted. Even standing here, some 20 feet from the wide wooden gates into the fort, he could smell how wrong the place was. It was stuffed with the scents of men, sweaty bodies, the smell of oil, and other newer scents that he recognized from his recent trips to the home isles. Scents that made him feel like an outsider among his own people. The company men wore sturdy clothing, trousers like Dusk's but far better tailored, shirts and rugged jackets. Jackets? In Patchy's heat? These people bowed to Vati, showing her more deference than Dusk would have expected. They drew hands from shoulder to shoulder as they started speaking, a symbol of respect. Foolishness. Anyone could make a gesture like that. It didn't mean anything. True respect included far more than a hand waved in the air. But they did treat her like more than a simple scribe. She was better placed in the company than he'd assumed. Not his problem anymore, regardless. Vati looked at him, then back at her people.
"We must hurry to the machine," she said to them. "The one from above. We must turn it off."
Good. She would do her part. Dusk turned to walk away. Should he give words at parting? He'd never felt the need before. But today it felt wrong not to say anything. He started walking. Words. He had never been good with words.
"Turn it off," one of the men said from behind. "What do you mean, Lady Vati?"
"You don't need to feign innocence, Winds," Vati said. "I know you turned it on in my absence."
"But we didn't."
Dusk paused.
"What?"
The man sounded sincere, but then Dusk was no expert on human emotions. From what he'd seen of people from the home isles, they could fake emotion as easily as they faked a gesture of respect.
"What did you do then?" Vati asked.
"We opened it."
"Oh no."
"Why would you do that?" Vati asked.
Dusk turned to regard them, but he didn't need to hear the answer. The answer was before him, in the vision of a dead island he'd misinterpreted.
"We figured," the man said, "that we should see if we could puzzle out how the machine worked. Vati, the insides. They're complex beyond what we could have imagined. But there are seeds there. Things we could..."
"No!
Dusk said, rushing toward them. One of the sentries above planted an arrow at his feet. He lurched to a stop, looking wildly from Vatty up toward the walls. Couldn't they see? The bulge in mud that announced a death ant den, the game trail, the distinctive curl of a cutaway vine. Wasn't it obvious?
It will destroy us, Dusk said. Don't seek. Don't you see?
For a moment, they all just stared at him. He had a chance. Words. He needed words.
That machine is death ants, he said. A den, a... Bah!
How could he explain? He couldn't. In his anxiety, words fled him, like Aviar fluttering away into the night. The others finally started moving, pulling Vatty toward the safety of their treasonous fortress.
You said the corpses are gone, Vatty said as she was ushered through the gates. We've succeeded. I will see that the machine is not engaged on this trip. I promise you this, Dusk.
But, he cried, it was never meant to be engaged.
The enormous wooden gates of the fortress creaked closed, and he lost sight of her. Dusk cursed. Why hadn't he been able to explain? Because he didn't know how to talk. For once in his life, that seemed to matter. Furious, frustrated, he stalked away from that place and its awful smells. Halfway to the tree line, however, he stopped, then turned. Sack fluttered down, landing on his shoulder and cooing softly. Questions. Those questions wanted into his brain. Instead, he yelled at the guards. He demanded they return Vatty to him. He even pled. Nothing happened. They wouldn't speak to him. Finally, he started to feel foolish. He turned back toward the trees and continued on his way. His assumptions were probably wrong. After all, the corpses were gone. Everything could go back to normal. Normal. Could anything ever be normal with that fortress looming behind him? He shook his head, entering the canopy. The dense humidity of Patchy's jungle should have calmed him. Instead, it annoyed him. As he started the trek toward another of his safe camps, he was so distracted that he could have been a youth, his first time on Sori. He almost stumbled straight onto a gaping death ant den. He didn't even notice the vision Sack sent. This time, dumb luck saved him as he stubbed his toe on something, looked down, and only then spotted both corpse and crack crawling with motes of yellow. He growled, then sneered.
"Still you try to kill me?"
he shouted, looking up at the canopy.
"Patchy!"
Silence.
"The ones who protect you are the ones you try hardest to kill,"
Dusk shouted.
"Why?"
The words were lost in the jungle. It consumed them.
"You deserve this, Patchy," he said. "What is coming to you? You deserve to be destroyed."
He breathed out in gasps, sweating, satisfied at having finally said those things. Perhaps there was a purpose for words. Part of him, as traitorous as Vatty and her company, was glad that Patchy would fall to their machines. Of course, then the company itself would fall to the ones above. His entire people, the world itself. He bowed his head in the shadows of the canopy, sweat dripping down the sides of his face. Then he fell to his knees, heedless of the nest just 3 strides away. Sack nuzzled in his hair. Above in the branches, Kokerlee chirped uncertainly.
"It's a trap, you see," he whispered. "The ones above have rules. They can't trade with us until we're advanced enough. Just like a man can't in good conscience bargain with a child until they are grown. And so, they have left their machines for us to discover, to prod at and poke. The dead man was a ruse. That he was meant to have those machines. There will be explanations left as if carelessly for us to dig into and learn. And at some point in the near future, we will build something like one of their machines. We will have grown more quickly than we should have. We will be childlike still, ignorant, but the laws from above will let these visitors trade with us.
and then they will take this land for themselves.
That was what he should have said. Protecting Patchy was impossible. Protecting the Aviar was impossible. Protecting their entire world was impossible. Why hadn't he explained it? Perhaps because it wouldn't have done any good. As Vati had said, progress would come, if you wanted to call it that. Dusk had arrived. Sack left his shoulder, winging away. Dusk looked after her, then cursed. She did not land nearby. Though flying was difficult for her, she fluttered on, disappearing from his sight.
"Sack?"
he asked, rising and stumbling after the Aviar. He fought back the way he had come, following Sack's squawks. A few moments later, he lurched out of the jungle. Vati stood on the rocks before her fortress. Dusk hesitated at the brim of the jungle. Vati was alone, and even the sentries had retreated. Had they cast her out? No. He could see that the gate was cracked, and some people watched from inside. Sack had landed on Vati's shoulder down below. Dusk frowned, reaching his hand to the side and letting Kokerli land on his arm. Then he strode forward, calmly making his way down the rocky shore until he was standing just before Vati. She'd changed into a new dress, though there were still snarls in her hair. She smelled of flowers, and her eyes were terrified. He'd traveled the darkness with her, had faced night maws, had seen her near to death, and she had not looked this worried.
"What?"
he asked, finding his voice hoarse.
"We found instructions in the machine," Vati whispered. "A manual on its workings, left there as if accidentally by someone who worked on it before. The manual is in their language, but the smaller machine I have..."
"It translates."
"The manual details how the machine was constructed," Vati says. "It's so complex I can barely comprehend it, but it seems to explain concepts and ideas, not just give the workings of the machine."
"And are you not happy?" he asked. "You will have your flying machines soon, Vati. Sooner than anyone could have imagined."
Wordless, she held something up. A single feather. A mating plume. She had kept it.
"Never move without asking yourself, is this too easy?" she whispered. "You said it was a trap as I was pulled away. When we found the manual, I..." "Oh, Dusk, they are planning to do to us what we are doing to Patchy, aren't they?"
Dusk nodded.
"We'll lose it all. We can't fight them. They'll find an excuse. They'll seize the Aviar. It makes perfect sense. The Aviar use the worms. We use the Aviar. The ones above use us. It's inevitable, isn't it?"
"Yes," he thought. He opened his mouth to say it, and Sack chirped. He frowned and turned back toward the island, jutting from the ocean, arrogant, destructive. Patchy, father. And finally, at long last, Dusk understood.
"No,"
he whispered.
"But..."
He undid his pants pocket, then reached deeply into it, digging around. Finally, he pulled something out. The remnants of a feather, just the shaft now. A mating plume that his uncle had given him so many years ago, when he'd first fallen into a trap on Sori. He held it up, remembering the speech he'd been given. Like every trapper. "This is the symbol of your ignorance. Nothing is easy. Nothing is simple." Vati held hers, old and new.
"No, they will not have us," Dusk said. "We will see through their traps, and we will not fall for their tricks, for we have been trained by the Father himself for this very day."
She stared at his feather, then up at him.
"Do you really think that?"
she asked.
"They are cunning."
"They may be cunning," he said, "but they have not lived on Patchy. We will gather the other trappers.
We will not let ourselves be taken in.
She nodded hesitantly, and some of the fear seemed to leave her. She turned and waved for those behind her to open the gates to the building. Again, the sense of mankind washed over him. Vatti looked back, then held out her hand to him.
You will help, then?
His corpse appeared at her feet, and Sack chirped warningly, Danger. Yes, the path ahead would include much danger. Dusk took Vatti's hand and stepped into the fortress anyway. Postscript. The original version of this story had Dusk referring to himself as Sixth, which was super confusing to readers. I liked it because it was so different, but in the end I relented to the feedback I was getting, because it was the right thing to do. Not only is Dusk more important thematically than Sixth, it's way easier to keep track of in a sentence. For those who don't know, this story was brainstormed on an episode of Writing Excuses. We did 4 episodes where we brainstormed together, then one of us took that idea and wrote a story on it. The initial brainstorming session we did for me ended up failing. I just wasn't excited about the story. So we tried again, and this was the result. This is the only story in the anthology where the world wasn't built into the original Cosmere plan. I did, however, leave myself room in my Cosmere outline for a handful of worlds I hadn't defined yet, as I knew I'd eventually have stories I wanted to tell that didn't fit on a planet with a shard. Our brainstorming session on air wasn't specifically for a Cosmere story, but as I worked on the outline, I was intrigued by the idea of using symbiosis, in a new way, for a Cosmere investiture. I quickly fell in love with the idea and the resulting story. You'll likely see more from the people of this planet, though there are no plans for another story or novel in the world. If you can't tell from the Alcatraz books and the Horneater culture in the Stormlight Archive, I have a fascination with Polynesian culture. The concept of wayfinding through the lapping of waves is just one of those things that won't leave me alone. And the ability to write about a character out on his own on the ocean, isolated in multiple ways, was intriguing to me. Also, considering how many talkative characters I do in books, it was a pleasure to try something new in someone like Dusk. This is the farthest forward, timeline-wise, of any of the stories in this collection. So at the time of Chris's writing of the introduction to the system, the events of this story haven't actually taken place yet. If you'd like to read the original brainstorming sessions in print form, along with early drafts of this story, they're available, along with the 3 stories written by the other hosts of Writing Excuses, Mary Robinette Cole, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor, in an anthology called Shadows Beneath.